The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Whatever you're taking us in this morning, we appreciate it. I'm not sure why I screamed YouTube TV there, just there, but it just came out of my body that way. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada, the D. You good, man?
I'm good, man.
Yeah? What are you doing over there? You making NBA bets? What are you?
No, man. No, I'm just checking in on some things. I'm producing over here, okay?
Checking in on
some things. Checking in on Will Hill for tomorrow. Okay. Searching some things on our site.
We got Paul Sporer coming up later on the show to talk some MLB with us. That's Major League Baseball, Kelly. And we'll look at some of these NBA awards. I know we promised to do it yesterday. We sort of dipped our toe into it, but then we got sidetracked. So we'll talk about this because I do want to talk about that Jalen Williams thing because I don't know if you know this, just less than 3 weeks left in the NBA season, and he's 50-1 for something. And I just want to get into, is this really possible?
Numbers coming down too. Like that story's picking up. Most improved six man are way up in the air right now.
Nebulous. Let's talk some college hoops. One of the three members of the great three-man weave trio. It's James Patrick Root, everybody. Jim Root joins us. Kind enough to do so at Second Chance Points. Is his own personal Twitter at 3MW_CBB. Of course, three-man weaves. He comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Jim?
I'm good. Yeah, maybe I'm the most Irish member of the Weave, but McEwen, I don't know. He might have me beat there with the MCK last name.
Oh, Kai McEwen. Oh, I don't know. But once we make it James Patrick Root, though, I think you might take the cake. Hey, I have a question for you because we're talking about a little bit about this off air, but I don't want to talk about the specifics. I want to talk about just the general handicapping point. We're all watching games. You guys were in Vegas. Hope you. By the way, you have a good time in Vegas, the three of you.
I sure did. Yeah, we all did. A shout out to Circa for being wonderful hosts. It was great to be out there.
What did they give you, a cabana? What happened there?
Yeah, we broadcasted live from Stadium Swim for 4 days, did our best bet show from there, and they put us up in a room. We got to watch games with Derek Stevens a little bit, enjoy that. So, all the luxury and perks of being out on at Circa downtown.
That's awesome. Kelly, look into see if we can get a cabana one day. Yeah, let's look into that.
Hey, you got it.
Okay, thanks. So the before we get into your thoughts on the Final Four and, of course, maybe some NIT thoughts tonight, there was a general handicapping point that I think is an interesting one that, handicappers have to grapple with. And that is the question of regression and a team either shooting way above or shooting way below their general percentage in either, a game, a stretch of games, or even in this case, I think it was a half of basketball. I don't know if you want to give the specific circumstance of this, but generally, how do you deal with that when you're sort of assessing things at halftime of a ball game?
Yeah, generally, I'm looking at those numbers and trying to see if, like you said, if a team is shooting above or below. And sometimes it's even the opposition. I think one of the biggest examples in this tournament was Clemson. Through three games, their opponents were 14 of 75 from three. That is sub 19%. And so to me, the games I had watched, it felt like while they were playing good defense, there were a lot of open shots being missed by their opponent. So then they go to the Alabama game, the Crimson Tide start 1 for 12 from three, and it's kind of it's happening again. These teams just can't make jumpers against them. And then Alabama completely catches fire. They make 15 threes the rest of the way. They're able to sneak ahead of Clemson there. And, some people could say, Alabama's just a good shooting team and they made shots. But like Clemson had beaten Arizona, really good shooting team. They beat Baylor, one of the best shooting teams in the entire country, with them shooting well below their season percentages. So I was kind of clinging to the idea that there might be some regression coming, that perhaps they were giving up better shots than the numbers indicated. And I think for a little bit, NC State had that going too, especially the Marquette game. I think they gave up a lot of open jumpers that just didn't fall. But then their defense against Duke was phenomenal. Like I didn't think that was a regression thing. Duke did hit some jumpers in the final minute when the game was out of hand, but for most of it, it was just they were forcing tough shots. Duke didn't have an offensive plan. So overall, I'm looking at it, and especially like you said, halftime, second half stuff, try to take a peek at that and see if it is matching up with my eye test. And that can sometimes lead to a second half wager. Like in that Duke game, I did bet a little bit on the second half over, It's because I thought both teams are getting more open shots than were actually going in. I think they're only 48 points at halftime of that game.
Yeah, and I can't remember which game it was that I actually tweeted you because I agreed with you. I don't know if it was the Clemson-Arizona game. I don't know if it was the Clemson-Baylor game. Whichever it was, where I felt like the announcers, right? We often say this as bettors. This is where, like, the mainstream announcers can kind of help us with bets because they're promulgating a narrative that isn't actually true, right? So the Clemson thing, and I like Brian Anderson, but Brian Anderson, I remember distinctly saying, boy, that Clemson defense. And I'm just like, no, they're just missing open threes, man. Like, and I felt like that took people down the wrong path, that he kept saying that and kind of opened up an opportunity for us.
Yeah, I think, you know, I got caught doing it, I think, in both the Arizona and Baylor games where I live bet the other side against Clemson because I thought, hey, these jumpers are going to start falling. They're going to start falling. And I tweeted like, oh, it's like hitting on 16. Well, you just got to keep doing it, even if it doesn't work. And then, you know, what did I do? I did not live bet Alabama when they got down against Clemson. And you know, we all know what happens when you switch strategies mid-shoe.
Sure.
Yeah. It always comes back to bite you. And that's what it did there. Alabama came all the way back and covered.
Yeah. And let me just point out, it might not happen in that very game, but it might happen as it did down the road in the Clemson-Alabama game. Okay. Before we get to the Final Four, any thoughts on either of tonight's two NIT semis? Utah and Indiana State, where the Sycamores are 3.5-point favorites. The total is 163. And then Georgia and Seton Hall is the nightcap. Seton Hall, 4.5-point favorites with the total set at 146.
Nothing super strong, especially the Seton Hall one. They've got some injuries that I'm not totally sure who's going to end up playing. I kind of have an interest in Indiana State, though. To me, it feels so important to them and that program that they're at this point still. You know, Indiana State hasn't had this kind of postseason success in quite a while. And they, you know, it's very local to them. Terre Haute to Indianapolis, not a difficult travel. They had a very nice fan send off leaving Terre Haute. So I think they're going to have a pretty solid contingent in the crowd. And they've got basically everybody playing. Their top six, that's who matter. And all those guys have been playing. Whereas Utah's still a little banged up. Riley Worcester's missed about, you know, 15, 20 games the second half of the season. Travel may be a little bit tougher for Utah coming over to Hinkle. The number is tilted their way a little bit. I will say that. I think it's kind of reflective of the difference in travel. But I just think the Sycamores have taken this tournament as seriously as anybody. And they've got some advantages in terms of the speed on the floor compared to Utah. So I do like Indiana State tonight.
Yeah, and I wonder if this is one of those games where the more advanced bettors betted on the money line because they have more of a stomach for the minus 170 or whatever the best money line you can find out there for the Sycamores. A more advanced or more savvy, more professional bettor will say value's value. I'm laying the money line juice, right? I don't want to deal with the spread. Whereas the more novice bettor will be like, minus 170 sure sounds like a lot. I'm going to lay the 3.5, leaving themselves open for the uncomfortable non-cover there, if you will.
I buy that. One like helpful thing there, Indiana State's number two in the country in free throw percentage. So hopefully if it comes down to that, they can cover, but you never know. You know, you don't want to be laying over possession is always much more nerve-wracking than the money line.
All right, let's get to it, Jim. Saturday, Final Four. Not sure if you're aware of this. It begins with NC State and Purdue. Boilermakers favored by 9.5 now. It keeps ticking upwards. 146.5 the total here. God, people love Purdue. Like, have they watched what NC State is doing? I don't get this.
Yeah, I opined during the NC State Duke game that we would have two double-digit spreads in this round, and that's like it's only been one double-digit spread in the Final Four since 1999. The fact that we're very close to two kind of tells you how good the top teams are and how much people value them. Yeah, the Purdue NC State matchup, I mean, everybody's going to discuss it, but I think it comes down to Burns versus Edie. Burns has been singularly dominant this entire tournament run. Teams can't handle him 1v1, but he's had a major strength advantage against basically everybody he's gone against. I don't think that happens against 7'4", 300-pound Zach Edie. I think people will continue to complain about Edie's lack of committing fouls, but he is terrific at verticality, forcing you to shoot over the top. Does Burns have the touch to do that? I don't know. I think NC State's offense becomes a lot less imposing. If he can't score one-on-one and you don't have to double team and he can't fan it out to open shooters. That said, the number does feel a little bit high to me. I've adjusted my power rating NC State fairly significantly relative to what it was at the beginning of the tournament. And they're just playing with kind of the air of confidence coming into this game. And Purdue's offense is very complex, but they've got, you know, a lot of time to deal with it. So I do lean NC State there.
And then UConn by 12 now. Speaking of ticking upwards, UConn by 12 over Bama. 160 is the total.
Yeah, this one I tweeted right away when the circle line came out. It took 10.5, and I think it dipped to 10 for a very brief second, but now it's pretty well settled in at 12. I just think UConn is a complete, you know, monstrous force, given they've been up by 30 in every single game they played in this tournament. They covered every single tournament game last year. I think they're an impossible prep because of their intricate offense. Defensively, they've got Klingon, or they can play a lot more switchy with Samson Johnson. I just don't think anybody really has answers for them right now. And Alabama is going to be super one-dimensional shooting the three. So unless they make like 16 to 20 again, which they're capable of, I think this ends up being a runaway, especially in the paint. I think UConn just completely decimates them in the two-point range in the arc. So I did take the 10.5 and still lean their way at 12.
Okay. Please let the 16 for 20 happen. I would love to see it. I might have a future on Alabama, but I'd still love to see it anyway. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Jim Root at Second Chance Points. That's with the number 2. And at 3MW_CBB for all of three-man weave stuff. We'll talk NBA awards on the other side. What of most improved player and beyond? I won't go crazy on Wembanyama today. I already did it yesterday. It's a numbers game. Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
New VSIN website. Spectacular. Check it out. Article right on the top today at VSIN.com. Michael Lombardi, it's now or never for Trevor. Trevor Lawrence he's talking about. Now or never for Trevor. Oh, that's interesting.
It's got a good rhyme to it.
First, it does indeed. Who's making the headlines? Genius. Jonathan Montobel on first five-inning best bets and analysis for today's MLB card. We'll get into it with Paul Spohr a little later on. College basketball best bets and projections from T-Shoe, Tyler Shoemaker. It's all at VSiN.com, Kelly. All at VSiN.com. Betting splits, best bets, anything else at VSiN.com today. Check it out. Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. Before we get into the NBA, I just want to say this again about NC State. Because I went through this yesterday. I went through how it reminds me and reminds many of us of the 1983 Jim Valvano run to the NCAA title. For those of us of a certain age, it remains, along with Villanova in 85. But in, you know, when they beat Georgetown, which was a David versus Goliath. But the run of NC State in 83, and I mentioned that they beat Pepperdine in double overtime, and how this outfit of the Wolfpack, how they had to win 5 games in 5 days at a Capital One Arena in D.C. in the ACC tournament. No one gave them a chance. And in the semifinals, again, an 88.5%, 88.5% free throw shooter in Isaac McNeely misses the front end of a 1-1. And then Michael O'Connell hits this ridiculous bank 3 to send the game into overtime. They win there, and then they beat, you know, and then they win the ACC title. 5 games in 5 days. And everybody thinks that they're, at that point, they're like, well, I mean, clearly a team that was going to be knocked out with any of those losses, the run is going to have tired them emotionally and physically so much, they'll never be able to do this in the NCAA tournament. By the way, they had lost again. They had lost 7. What was it again? I just want to get it right. Because the team in 83 had lost 9 of their last 19. That almost comprised the whole season back then. But this NC State team had lost their last 4 regular season games, 7 of 9 and 10 of their last 14. Like, no one gave them a shot.
It's nuts.
Even when they win the ACC tournament, they were 200-1 to get to the Final Four once the big dance started. And then they go and they beat Texas Tech, you know, in the game that everybody said they'd be emotionally down for, 80-67. Then Oakland, the upstart, right, with the kid hitting threes left and right. Kid, he's like my, you know, it could be my younger brother, how old he is. They beat Oakland 79-73. Then they take down number 2 Marquette by 9, and then they beat Duke. You figure Duke had revenge on their mind now, and NC State beat them too. So it, you can make the case that this NC State team feels not only just like the 83 team, but this is more of a cardiac underdog team than that was.
Well, wasn't there, didn't I hear someone say yes? I mean, there was a couple NBA players on that team, right? On the 83 team?
Well, they had Derek Wittenberg, no one who really had great NBA
success.
I mean,
no one like stars, yeah.
Derek Wittenberg, Sidney Lowe, Thurl Bailey, Cozell McQueen, Terry Gannon, who, by the way, does ESPN broadcasting. He's a play-by-play guy.
Just
the,
still.
The stars on that team were Wittenberg and Lowe.
Just I don't know if there's any NBA level talent on the current edition of this NC State squad.
Unless you think DJ Burns could be like a Zach Randolph, Bonzi Wells kind of guy.
I mean, if you were on X at all yesterday trying to weave through all the fake news out there, I guess there's legitimate, I'll say this lightly, legitimate interest from the NFL front offices in him.
I mean, I don't know. But I'm just saying, it's incredible, and I can't believe that this line is going the other direction. I can't, and I know it's Zach Edey, but I can't. Give me the points. I might even sprinkle some, because I've seen this before. I get it. They weren't playing Zach Edey, but they were playing others. Believe me. Have you heard of Akeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler? Have you heard of those guys before? Okay. NBA. I already did my Victor Wembanyama thing, Defensive Player of the Year. I'm not going to get into it again today. But what was so funny when you were saying off air that somebody said, you know who the most improved player is this year? Victor Wembanyama.
We're going to most improved. And I was listening to Windhorse and Bontemps yesterday on their podcast talk about some of this stuff. And it was kind of Bontemps' reaction to Jalen Williams being brought up as most improved. He's like, well, if we're going to play that game, the real most improved player is Victor Wembanyama. Because like in December, he wasn't even the rookie of the year. It was Chet Holmgren probably then. And now he's definitely winning rookie of the year. He's in discussion for the defensive player of the year, and he's been one of the better players in the NBA. Look, I have a preseason bet on Maxey in this award. This and sixth man is where we're going to kind of focus on here, but it's fascinating to me, Gil, because I think this is very up in the air between those three guys. I think Kuminga's probably out of it at this point. I don't know what you do with the Maxey case. Like, he's getting punished for how the 76ers have played, but, you know, which we knew was coming. And it's kind of the national media punishing, but you still see him at minus 250. He's a big favorite still in the books. Stat-wise, I understand it. I mean, he improved from 20 points per game to 25 points per game. Yes, you could say a lot of this was done while Embiid was on the court, but he's had to carry the whole team basically since he's been gone. 3.5 assists to 6.5 assists. 3-point shooting percentage is a little bit down this year, but he's the guy with the ball so much more often. Look, Jalen Williams, it's a great case. Second year, 14 points to over 19.5 points per game. If you've watched the Thunder at all, he's such a key to the success. I'd be very okay if it ended up going that way. I mean, I have a bet on Maxey. I texted you. I did finally hedge on some Coby White last week. Like Drew hinted at, the Bulls are starting to fire up the campaign for Coby White here. He's the Lauri Markkanen case from last year, which I got burned on having a Shea ticket, and it went to Lauri Markkanen because Coby White has had 5 years in this league where he's been up and down, up and down. But you just look at what he did last year. Sure, 19 from 10 points a game up to 19 points per game is a massive, massive leap, and that's all a lot of people are going to look at in 2.8 assists. To 5.2 assists.
Can I make the Jalen Williams advanced stats case?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jalen Williams' highest true shooting percentage in the clutch this season, 81.4%. Williams' PER, for those who don't know, that's John Hollinger's stat, the player efficiency rating, improved to plus 3.6 to White's plus 2.1, Maxey plus 2.5. That's a pretty big difference in PER numbers, by the way. VORP, value over replacement player improvement from last year. Maxey plus 1.6, Williams plus 1.0, White plus 0.5, so Maxey gets him there. Box plus minus improvement, Maxey plus 2.1, Williams plus 2.0, White way off at plus 0.4. And if you're talking about team improvement, it's no comparison, right? OKC versus Philly and Chicago. So
I get grossed out by the idea of just awarding anything to the Chicago Bulls right now. It's a team that's had no direction for the past few years. They keep running back the same unit. Doesn't make any sense. I am very okay with. So I did bet Kobe White. I'm with Drew. I kind of have a feeling he's going to end up winning this thing. Did bet him just to hedge my maxi ticket a bit last week, but I don't think Jalen Williams is out of this. And at long odds, I'm gonna probably add on a little bit there. It's going to make it a little bit watered down a win here for whoever wins for me. But I could, again, we brought this up last week. I think it's two guys in the past 30 years who've won this in their second year. It's very hard to do. There will be voters that will dismiss him just for that, with the whole idea of you're supposed to improve in your second year being the thing. But I think it's live, and I think he's deserving based on what the team has done. I do.
The sexy thing here, of course, is the 50-1 on Jalen Williams. So most of the people listening right now are like, oh, wow, should I bet that? I got to bet that. Okay, there's one thing about the sexiness of that, and then there's one thing about actuality. Should people be betting that, or is it just, or are these just NBA awards bettors who, as we see in the Defensive Player of the Year, don't get me started, I'm getting mad just talking about it. Right, who are just like, no, Rudy Gobert is the best defensive player on the best defensive team, which, by the way, he might not be the best defensive player on the best defensive team. I should point that out. Victor Wembanyama, whose stats so trump his in every which way that it's a joke that it's not Wembanyama's. Are we just going to get a very simplistic, simpleton thing to odds to win most improved player? And because it's been Maxey all year long, the same voters are going to be like, well, I guess it's Maxey, so I'm just going to vote for Maxey. Or, oh, no, Kobe White. Yeah, because it's Kobe White. He's in his sixth year. But, like, no one's thinking about it being Jalen Williams.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that there are more people coming around to Kobe White in the past month or so just because the 76ers have been so bad. I think if 76ers were able to hang around 500 a little bit more while Embiid was out, this would have been Maxey from day one, and we wouldn't even really be talking about it. I don't think Wemby or Jalen Williams is completely out of the running of winning those awards. But yet, if you're betting into them right now, you have to keep in mind that there are voters out there that will simply write them off. They will not even consider them because of the NBA track record of those awards. It's silly, and it is what it is. And if you're betting into them right now, you got to know that.
As with all awards bettings, remember, we're handicapping the voters, not the actual, you know, players themselves. And as I pointed out yesterday, at least with Major League Baseball and the NFL, while we talk about them all year and we all can disagree, we all kind of understand the other person's points. In the NBA, I think it's a particularly brain dead assessment of stuff. And Defensive Player of the Year to me is the most obvious of that. But these are hard awards to really get behind because you just have no idea what people are.
I think I'm going to make a bet in six, man. We'll talk about that one.
We'll do that a little later. Paul Sporer, a little baseball break next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits. For free, just sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage, why don't you, of this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/splits now to claim your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits. Don't strike out on potential winnings. Visit VSiN.com/splits and start making smarter baseball bets today. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. You see this kid in the UFL who kicked a 64-yard field goal? How's he not playing in the NFL?
I have no idea.
64-yard field. By the way, he kicked a 64-yard field goal. His name is Jake Bates. He kicked a 64-yard field goal with just 3 seconds left to play to give the Panthers an 18-16 win. The Michigan Panthers, by the way, Kelly.
I was going to say, what city or state are we from?
Just that? Like Panthers. You know the Panthers. The Michigan Panthers, 18-16 win over the St. Louis Battlehawks. That after he nailed a 64-yarder.
There was a timeout.
There was a timeout,
right?
So he had to kick it again, and he nails it again.
Yeah, they were showing, I think I was watching ESPN, they were showing the replays of that and trying to walk, like, talk it through, and it was... Like, it was like the same kick. Like, I couldn't tell which kick was which kick.
Right, it had the same trajectory.
By
the way, the Lions, just now, the Lions are one of multiple NFL teams that have already reached out about Bates now as the kicker.
Right. I don't know. So what the story was, he kicked in high school, I guess, then played soccer in college.
Yeah.
And then went
back. At Central Arkansas. How is he not kicking at Central Arkansas or at Texas State?
Yeah, I don't really know.
At Texas State, they only let him kick off.
Right.
They're like,
he was doing kickoffs.
Field goals are too advanced for you. Just kick off with that leg of yours.
He must have been all over the place.
Jake Bates. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk some baseball. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, it's our old buddy Paul Sporer at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R on Twitter. He comes to us, of course, from the great Fangraphs. Sleeper in the Bus, the name of the podcast. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm doing very well, Gail. Great to be with y'all.
The Houston Astros cap is because of the no-hitter yesterday?
Absolutely. A little support for Ronel Blanco, 30 years old. Yeah, not even a journeyman, because I don't think he's been in multiple organizations, so you can't really just say that. But, you know, kind of an afterthought type guy, gets in the rotation due to the injuries, goes out there and drops a gem. Had looked good in spring, was doing some things, kind of on the radar a little bit for fantasy. But, you know, with a difficult start there, you know, Toronto, we expect to be a difficult lineup. And then a trip to Texas at the end of this week, he was like a tentative play in fantasy this week. Like, be careful with Toronto and Texas. Boom, drops a no-no. And again, looked excellent doing it. There was nothing fluky about this. The changeup was filthy. His stuff was great. And, you know, just over 100 pitches too. So they didn't have to run him into the ground to get it done.
Yeah, 9 innings, complete game, obviously complete game, no hitter, 105 pitches, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, 105 pitches in his no-no. So just amazing. Ronel Blanco, it felt like the Astros were just taking out all their frustration, 10-0
Absolutely.
Win, by the way, against the Jays yesterday, all their frustration after getting swept in 4 by the Yankees,
and
at home, and those games were winnable. For the Astros too, and the Yankees made all the big plays. Let me just ask about the Yankees, who start out of the gates 5-0 now after yesterday. Time for people to start believing.
I mean, sure, like they're a solid team. I still am like a little bit nervous about their starting rotation. Obviously losing Cole was a massive hit to them. I do like the guy who threw yesterday, Luis Gil, youngster, not just saying this because they share a first name, but the best of Luis Gil can look like peak Luis Severino. That's something to get excited about, us fantasy folks. Pretty upset about the 4 2/3 yesterday. Didn't get the win there, but he looks pretty good. And obviously they really need Rodon to step up. Got to see what he can do in Arizona this week. He's going to be instrumental. I think Stroh is what he is, you know, a solid upper threes, low fours ERA guy, going to give you 5, 6, 7 solid innings every time out. Nasty Nestor, if he's healthy, looks pretty good. Schmidt and he are kind of the game changers right now while they wait for Cole to come back. And of course, we know that they're going to go out and make moves too if they're close. Will Warren and Chase Hampton, some interesting prospects that could come up and need some innings too. So it comes down to the pitching for them. Love a lot of what they got going with the offense. I was actually a big Oswaldo Cabrera breakout fan last year. So classic Sporer a year early for those who have been following my fantasy stuff for years. I've been a year early on so many guys. And so maybe I'm a year early on Oswaldo. We're not going to say too much after 5 games, but he looks good so far.
There is nothing funnier when the person says of himself, classic me, classic Sporer. Let me ask you about some other teams on the extremes right now. Again, only after a handful of games, not even in some cases. Your Tigers are 4-0. I don't want to ignore that. And the Buccos, the Pittsburgh Pirates are 5-0. Which is more sustainable over the long term?
Couple of really interesting upstarts that, you know, both the gambling sharps and fantasy folks were really intrigued by both these clubs. I do think it is my Tigers a little bit more. I believe in their pitching top to bottom, not just being a homer here. I am a little bit concerned about the hitting, as we've seen, you know, outside of the little barrage in the 10th inning yesterday. They had been winning by exactly 1 run in every game, and that was playing the White Sox 3 times, and they couldn't really get the offense going. There's some good offensive pieces, but they need to get that offense going more if they're really going to stick around. But both are in the Centrals too, which are the weaker divisions right now, and so it gives both a chance for some viability. That Pittsburgh ball club is interesting, and don't forget they're going to bring up Paul Skenes at some point. I really believe in him. I think he's a guy, you know, he's a Paul S, right? So he's guaranteed to be great just by virtue of being a Paul S. But I'm really excited about Paul Skenes. I think Pittsburgh's interesting. I'll give it a little edge to my Tigers there, and again, not just homerism, but the depth of the Tigers pitching is really impressive.
Paul Simon, Paul Stanley, for those of you who know music.
I'm telling you.
It's a lock. All right, we know about the A's. We know about the Rockies. Each has won a game. So I'm just going to throw them out for the purposes of this conversation. But the Mets are 0-4 and the Marlins are 0-5. Same question to the opposite. Like, which of those? Obviously, no one's going to go 0-162, just like nobody's going to do the reverse of that. But which appears to you to be more real suckitude?
You know, it's probably this Marlins team right now with this bullpen. It is an absolute nightmare. Tanner Scott had a bad spring. So did Andrew Nardi, a guy that I like that I thought could maybe back him up and take that closer's job. And then I start backpatting myself, classic Spore, backpatting before things are done. And I'm like, well, another bad outing for Scott and maybe my Anthony Bender speculation pickup will go well. And boom, he promptly gets smoked too. So right now their bullpen's an absolute mess. And that's the easiest way to consistently lose games is to blow the leads you do have and exacerbate the deficits that you're in. You know, the Mets aren't great, but I like their team a bit more. They have good bullpen pieces. Their rotation is just really rough right now. They're going to put so much on the backs of Severino and Manaea. Manaea looked great against the Tigers. And I like Quintana, but those guys are like threes, Quintana, Severino, Manaea, and they have to be the 1-2-3 for that ball club. So I do think they're a bit better than the Marlins, though. Their suckitude will alleviate a little bit, whereas the Marlins, I am worried, because if you can't get guys out in the middle of games, you just can't win ball games. And bullpens, they're super volatile. It could flip on a dime, but right now it's looking really bad, and it's carrying over a bad spring for the Marlins, too. That's the tough part.
By the way, I have this bet, Paul, where I have the Guardians at 65-1 to have the most wins through the month of April, the end of March. Ooh. In the early. The problem is that they're 3-2, and the two losses are already both one-run losses. So it's like, okay.
And one was to Oakland.
And one was to Oakland.
You blew an Oakland dub. Come on.
They came. They was 3-3. They came back, and they had first and third, nobody out, and then dude got picked off at third. So it's just, it's.
I was watching that one.
Brutal. All right, what about DFS today? What do you like?
Be careful of weather right now. So my top recommendation, I like to go cheap. Sometimes when there's a lot of aces going, kind of zig a little bit. So I like Ronaldo Lopez at 7,500 and Casey Mize at 7,100. Those are both on DraftKings. But again, both got the little rain cloud next to it. So you got to stay on top of that. Another potential pivot is an ace, Logan Webb, but he's going at the Dodgers. And so you probably won't have a lot of people on him. I trust Logan Webb everywhere. Dodgers are always difficult, always scary, but I like to pivot, especially if you're playing in these gigantic tournaments where you got to have a little bit of difference to kind of get an edge on the field there. So those are some guys that I definitely like. As far as going for hitting, even though Garrett Crochet looked great in his debut against the Tigers, he's facing Atlanta. Watch out for that rain, but give me as many Braves as I can get in there. And then give me as many right-handed Red Sox as I can get against Alex Wood. He did not look good against Cleveland. Give me your Tyler O'Neills. I'm trying to think, you know, your Trevor Stories. Casas is a lefty, but I might actually go lefty-lefty with it, to be honest, because I don't really trust Alex Wood there. So yeah, Red Sox hitters, Casey Mize, Ronaldo Lopez, as far as pitching, or Logan Webb, if you want to pay up a little bit and go for somebody big there against a tough matchup with the Dodgers.
You brought up Logan Webb. We only have 30 seconds. Logan Webb, just again, starting off with no run support in his first start this year. Can you remember anybody else who like has had this sustained amount of non-run support as Logan Webb has? This is just getting ridiculous. Score some runs for the dude.
There's a certain guy out east on a New York ball club that's now in Texas waiting to heal and get better, named Jacob DeGrom.
Yes.
Who I think is kind of the gold standard there. Yeah, but Logan Webb feels his pain, and it's brutal. And it might happen again tonight, but he should give you some good innings even against a difficult Dodgers ball club. Love Logan Webb.
By the way, I'm feeling a batting title for Jung-Hoo Lee. Might not be this year, but it's going to be one of these years.
I am with that. I love Jung-Hoo Lee, the grandson of Wind. Awesome.
The grandson of Wind. What a great nickname. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.
Take care.
More NBA on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Is it a prerequisite for the Sky Rizzy and the Jardians commercials to have cheesy dancers? I'm just asking.
Yes.
Oh, there's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. That is good. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use code ANG when you sign up. That's code ANG and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. Now. And the now's in capitals.
Now.
That's how I know they're serious. What was that?
Right now.
What?
Get it now. Director Matt says it's a side effect of the drugs.
Oh.
You just start dancing cheesy.
Oh, is that what it is? That's interesting. Because that girl in the Sky Rizzi commercial is all arms.
Yeah,
it's a little distracting. What is she doing? We can't, when Todd was here, we used to play in the weather. In the winter, we paid to play indoors at one of these clubs down here.
I was going to say, we're out.
I remember one time, just down by Henderson there.
Is it a country club?
A club.
Or an actual tennis club?
There's other stuff in there, but there's a whole tennis section to it. It's not a country club.
Okay.
But anyway, I remember one time coming out of there and being like, oh man, look at the sky. Because the sky was where, and Todd, without missing a beat, goes, Sky Rizzy! It's because he's Todd. But anyway, I'm just saying, the dancers are just a cheese fest on these commercials. I mean, incredible.
I'll go back to the janky phone one to your kids is driving me insane already. I feel like that one started like 4 days ago. I don't even know what company it is.
Oh, wait, there's a commercial set?
Yeah.
Because that's what I called
Paul
Carr's connection earlier.
I know you did.
Oh, maybe it's seeped into my brain.
It might have.
Oh.
Now you're going to notice it because you're going to see it 17 times today.
Yeah, maybe so.
Amazing with these things.
Back to the NBA and these awards.
Yeah, let's go to six man, which is even more of a nightmare.
Yeah, Drew was saying that too, right? Because Malik Monk is now out.
He's out. Yeah, he got hurt this past weekend. He has been ruled out, I think, for the next 4 weeks is what they're calling it.
This was always
like an MCL strain or something like that.
This was always strange to me too, because again, the casual basketball fan has not had Malik Monk on their radar all year.
Mm-hmm.
Only the basketball hardos have, to borrow the tennis phrase. Malik Monk remains minus 170 despite the injury. How is that real?
You are seeing some of these favorites. Their odds continue to get even shorter, right? Just because you're running out of games. So he got hurt. They only got like 8 or 9 games left, I get. But I still, with a race to me that's as close as this one is, it opens up a window. I mean, I never understood why he was this big of a favorite anyway. I think there are those top four guys you
anybody can
easily make a case for.
Yeah. So Naz Reid is plus 150 of the Mavs. Norman Powell is 9-1. You have a Norman Powell bet, right?
I have a Norman Powell ticket, yes.
And then Bobby Portis, 30-1.
Okay, so Naz Reid has been the guy who's gotten shorter and shorter in this market.
Oh.
He's putting up great stats. Here's the problem, though, Gil. And we might remember things we might have learned from a year ago. He's starting a bunch of games now. So his game started number keeps going up and up and up. I mean, it's only at... It's only currently a cheat.
Yeah, so that's always the problem.
But that was the thing last year. Everybody had Emmanuel Quickly. He was going to win. And then the voters were like, no, we're giving it to Malcolm Brogdon because he has been the pure sixth man of the year. He's come off the bench in every single game.
Right.
So, again, stupid like NBA voter rules, there are people that will completely, I don't think they'll consider Naz Reid by the time this is all said. I mean, he's been in the starting lineup here recently. I don't think that's going to change.
Didn't we have this with Clay a couple years ago, too, where it was like, oh, no, but if someone's hurt, then Clay's going to start. Was it Clay? One of these guys on the Warriors where I think we had the same sort of thing to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people got burned on Quickly tickets last year with that same thing. We've got some stats here.
Before you get into that, are NBA, this is a really ridiculous question, and I hope the answer is yes, but I just feel like I need to ask it. Are NBA voters of this award cognizant of the fact that some of these stats will be accumulated as a starter and therefore they should ignore them?
So, that's the problem. Like, I think... No, I
hope so.
It's something they should be keeping in mind.
Of course, right?
Absolutely.
But, like, is it possible that a couple or a few or 10 of them ignore that?
Yes.
So what are we talking about?
I'm glad you pointed that out. Yes, I'm glad you pointed that out. These four cases are all pretty tight to me. You are talking about, I mean, Malik Monk is, okay, cool. He's got the most points per game. But it's minimal. Like, you're talking about 1.4 more than what we're looking at with Norm Powell. Again, 8 games started for Naz Reid. He's going to probably start out the end of the season. So you're talking about 15, 16 starts that he's going to end up with. I understand the importance he's played on that Minnesota team, and that 3-point shooting has been incredible from him. I get it. I just don't think these four names should all be a little closer than the odds indicate. And I bet Norm, like, I was like a month ago, I think I'm going back to it. There's one guy on here like, I mean, Norm Powell closes. He might not start. He doesn't start. Never starts. He closes almost every single game for the Clippers. And now that they've kind of stopped this slide that they were on, and this team's playing better again, I think there's value on Norm at 9-1, right around that number. So I think I'm going to add a little bit more to my position there. This is not, it's not a market I'm in love with, but I just don't think, I don't think there should be that big of a difference between those two names at the top. And then to Norm Powell, and then even Bobby Portis.
Well, and there probably isn't in reality, which again is the PSA of all awards voting, which is the same thing that entices us, that makes these markets sexy to vote on, is because of that incongruence between the actual numbers and what is probably reality, right? Whereas in a, you know, odds to win a title market, those are all based on what we see on the court, and it's not by vote, it's by what will actually happen on the court. And so they are more real, they're more accurate to reality. This is a artificial representation of what is probably true. And so it allows for opportunity like a Bobby Portis at 30-1 if you believe that his resume stacks up here. Because you're right, in reality, he's probably way shorter than that. By the way, Bogdan Bogdanovic of the Hawks, 80-1, and Caris LeVert, Casanova.
You can cross them both off. I had a bogey ticket from preseason. I really wish it was live, but if we learned anything from last year, again, and then he started more games than Emmanuel Quickley has at this point, so I would toss him out.
I completely read their name, so I could say Casanova.
So the Bobby Portis one's interesting, right? Because you want to go crazy about Naz Reid. Well, okay, you just want to go stat-wise. Bobby Portis basically has the exact same stats as a Naz Reid does, with a very similar position and role on a team that's also very high up there in the standings in the other conference, right? I mean, you're talking, what, 13.1 points per game to 13.4. He's got more points, more rebounds per game than Naz Reid, and 1% worse from three.
How about the Bobby Portis reputation 180? People forget, right?
Yeah.
That he punched Nikola Mirotic, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
And, that was a horrible incident, right? That was in a practice.
Mm-hmm.
Was that with the Bulls, I believe?
Yeah, with the Bulls.
And then he became this beloved cog to the Milwaukee Bucks championship wheel. And no one ever brings that up again. And so I guess good on him for that.
Yeah, I would say that people talk about him similarly to a Draymond, where there's always that fire from Bobby. I mean, you see him in games and he gets a little crazy sometimes. Yeah. The eyes go real wide. Everybody knows the Bobby Portis eyes.
Yeah, I think people have tired of the Draymond act, though. Even Warriors fans, even his own coach, even his own teammates.
Yes, Steph. Right? Yeah, I don't think anybody's more tired of it than Steph and Steve Kerr.
When Draymond Green got ejected from that, less than 4 minutes into that game against the Magic last week, Steph Curry openly. Yeah. We've all seen it, like when we were playing basketball as a kid, where one of your teammates does something dumb, and you can't help yourself. You're like, I can't believe he just did that. Steph openly on the court doing that.
But you know what was the funniest part to me of that was the reminder of the trend that we uncovered earlier this year of the every time Draymond gets ejected from a game, it's usually in a game that Steph doesn't play it.
Yo, right.
He's always the guy check me out early. We're out. We're done. We're done. I'm getting ejected. So it was kind of funny seeing that, because you're like, Steph hasn't been on the court this many times for these happenings.
That's true. Yeah. All right. So what's the point of all this? Sixth man, most improved. If someone wanted to make a bet in any of these markets right now, you would say,
I think there's value on Norm Powell right now. I really Norm do. Powell. 9-1. I'm going to add to my position today a little bit.
Okay. 9-1 is what we're saying.
Because as you're kind of saying, yes, the excuse is that we're running out of games. Malik Monk's still going to hang there as a favorite, but there's enough games that are going to matter down the stretch here that all you got to do is influence voters, right? We're again back to, you got to influence a person. You don't got to influence the standings at all.
You're right. Just a quick glance at that little four-pack we just put up there with Monk, Powell, Reed, and Portis. There is no real massive difference,
right,
in any of them. Really, you could just throw them up in the air. If we took the names off, you wouldn't be able to remember who's on those. We've done all we can do. Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Nice job on the sixth man and the most improved. Gojo and Golic are next. Enjoy from Visa, the sports betting network.